Next step, our area code. June 4th, 2020.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to the next step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. There's no need to check your brain in at the door. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. These podcasts are part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Ministry and provided by epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Okay, where do we go from here? What's the next step, right? What's the next step? What's normal? You know, I hear a lot of people, will it return to normal? It's going to return to normal. It'll be back to normal. And then there's a new phrase called the new normal. We're living in the new normal. Did you know that in Armenia, that's one of those words that has been adopted from the English language as Armenian only because it's done with an accent? So if somebody asks you in Armenian, how are you? It's okay to say normal. Normal. Yeah, normal is normal, of course. But it's one of those words. It's normal. Is there a normal? Is there a normal? Are we going to return to some point where it was BC? Yeah, before the coronavirus. Are we going to go to BC before coronavirus? Are we going to before George Floyd? I mean, just as much as we started this year with all kinds of expectations. In fact, I ripped off a couple pages out of Time magazine from December 2019. It's just so fascinating because it was like the predictions for 2020. And there was all kinds of things. And you look at it now and you go, what? What? Impossible. You really predicted that? Well, yeah, nobody knew we'd be in this position right now. That was just 4 months. But how about last week? How about just last week? I mean, did you ever think we'd be where we are today? Not only in small pockets, not only Los Angeles, Minneapolis, throughout the world, there's demonstrations. There are people protesting, police violence. We're talking about racism, and it's the reality of racism all over the world. I mean, just this morning, Susan showed me a post from Revel. You guys remember Revel? We had an interview with them. We went out to North Dakota for Standing Rock. We were with the Native Americans out there. Yeah, he was posting. They're demonstrating in front of the U.S. Embassy in Armenia, in Yerevan, about the injustices, about what happened to George Floyd. So, I mean, will we ever go to a point in time where life will be like as it was? What is that new normal today? That's what we're going to be looking at today. I want to talk a little bit about that. And then what is our responsibility? I mean, I'm sure many of you are thinking, as I am, you know, like, what do we do? Do you engage in politics? Do you get involved in politics? Do you, and then there's the futility of politics too, once you see it. So what is the answer? Do you just like curl up in a small little corner of the room and just say, well, let somebody else handle it? What do you do with the world? Well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about what's going on. Okay, so last week we alluded to it only because it hadn't blown up. Last Thursday when we were together, we talked briefly about it, about George Floyd, this black man who was killed by police officers. Not only one, but four of them. One of which had his knee on his neck. He basically suffocated. Now, you know what's interesting about suffocation for me is that term, asphyxiation. Asphyxiation, do you know what that means? You hear it a lot, but when it just really hit me to the point where I had shivers down my spine when they pronounced the cause of death. They said a heart attack caused by asphyxiation. Well, I don't know the exact terms how they said it, but the word asphyxiation came in there and shivers down my spine. Why? How do you think Jesus Christ died? Jesus Christ on a cross. People think that they, you know, when in a crucifixion, you're up on the cross and you bleed to death. You get exhausted. You maybe dehydrate from being up there. Before any of those things can happen, before you bleed to death, before you're exhausted, before you are dehydrated, you die because of a lack of oxygen, asphyxiation. Asphyxiation, I mean, it's the condition of being deprived of oxygen. That's the textbook definition of it. Asphyxiate a person means to deprive them, to suffer, to smother them, to suffocate them. That's why on a cross, I mean, think about on a cross, the posture of an individual, whether it's Christ or anybody who was crucified, the nails in their hands, their feet tied up. Think about the posture, the torso leaning out and taking in breath. And each breath is almost like a suffocation in itself because you realize that you have to maneuver your body. And that's the truth of it. I mean, humans are incredible in finding ways to torture people. I don't know, in the animal kingdom, I guess they kill, but they kill animals to eat them. Torture, maybe you might think in the cats and the way they treat mice, and they play around with them a little bit, right? But the humans have this incredible ability to torture and then to look up and find some kind of enjoyment in it. Or is that enjoyment because of satisfaction? Satisfaction that, okay, we have brought punishment on that person. He deserves this. Imagine that. Jesus Christ dying on a cross of asphyxiation because he cannot breathe. He cannot take in oxygen. And as we read, we find out that people are watching and there's some enjoyment, satisfaction in it. Much like this George Floyd, who's on the floor saying, "I cannot breathe." Those are his words. "I cannot breathe." And a policeman with his knee on his neck, on George Floyd's neck. And then he passes out. He passes out and they're still on his neck. He's got other guys with him. Other policemen with him. And it's almost like that same satisfaction. That same enjoyment in watching this person suffer. Pleading for his life. You know, I knew a guy in my first parish. He wasn't part of our church. He was an Armenian fella, older man. He eventually ended up dying at age 105. But I knew him when he was in his 80s, 90s. From the Armenian Evangelical Group. That was the official name of this group that he'd belonged to. You know, then God forgive me for saying this. You know, it's that classic, you know, "We're better than thou because we know how to quote scripture." And most of the scriptures that they quote are things like Psalms and lamenting and stories of King Solomon and stories of Job and how the Israelis are, you know, were freed and this and that. Anyway, this guy from Beirut, he'd share with me, you know, that when his kids were young, he'd take them to the public hangings in Beirut or in Lebanon, wherever. He was from Beirut, and he'd say that, yeah, we'd go and we'd watch the hangings. The people would be there, and the criminals would be hung, and we'd watch, and their tongues would stick out, and he would gesture how it was. And I'm going, this is bizarre, man. This is bizarre. I mean, you're claiming about some evangelical connection with that word evangel evangelization is about spreading the good news of Jesus Christ, which means forgiveness. And you're talking to me about public hangings, about torture, about taking that delight and watching that torture. I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, God forgive me for even thinking about this. But it's horrible. We as human beings really know how to torture people. We come up with new and new ways. And what's interesting here in the United States, where capital punishment is still legal in many of the states, I don't even know if there are some states that have outlawed it, but yeah, it is legal. We have come up with this formula. It's called humane ways of killing people. Much like animals, there's a humane society. We are humane in the way that we kill animals. We don't torture them. We don't, you know, do horrible things to them. No, we quietly put them to sleep. And in the same way, we're talking about, well, when it comes to human beings, we have to find humane ways of doing it. And now when you start talking about that, you have something to start measuring with. Well, what is humane? Yeah, it's been a while since they've been debating this, but I think the last one was in Texas or something. Now they're down to injection. It used to be electrocution. They'd put somebody on an electric chair and it would be over relatively fast. Before that, it was firing squad. It would be over very fast, right? You'd be standing there and they would have multiple shooters who would shoot the individual, and the multiple would be for the sake of the shooter. So it's not just one executioner. Somebody's bullet hit him. And so there's like 10 people shooting a rifle at this one person. One of those bullets killed him, and you don't have to feel it was your bullet. So it's for the shooter to kind of relieve himself of that responsibility. Yeah. Then we have gas chamber now. Gas chamber. And we're now talking about injection, lethal injection, because the gas chamber was inhumane because it took a minute, 2 minutes. Now lethal injection. So now they're finding that because they're not, this is true, I can't make this up, because they are not putting people to death regularly, that the injection, the serum with which they inject them, the poison, is sitting on the shelf. And it's getting outdated. So they are objecting that if you use the old serum and it doesn't cause death immediately, well, that's cruel and unusual punishment. So we come up with all kinds of standards and all kinds of things. But here it is. Asphyxiation is the way that George Floyd died. It's the same way that Jesus Christ died. And that's why when I read that for the first time, I had chills up and down my spine, because this is how God came to our world and we treated him. And when Jesus says, for the least of my brothers, think about that. There he is, George Floyd, the least of his brothers. And what do? They're torturing him, right? When you've done it to him, you have done it to me. Those are the words of Christ. Matthew chapter 25. Check it out, okay? There you go. I'm doing it like, you know, the evangelicals, okay? I'm giving you the verse. There it is. When you do it for the least of my brothers, you're doing it to me. And that's when he's talking about doing the good. How about when you're doing the bad? Well, we saw it. That's what happened. When he did it to the least of his brothers, to George Floyd, he did it to Christ. Now, this is a very important point that you need to get, because I'll tell you why. As a human being, you're looking for something to say. Can we go back to the way it was before? No, you can't. This is Pandora's box. It's been opened. And we now are living in a completely different world. Physically, we're walking around with masks. Will we go back to a time where we're not wearing masks? We will definitely go to a time where we are not wearing masks, but not back to that time. Okay? There'll come a day when we can take the masks off, but it won't be life as it was before. people are engaging in conspiracy theories. I heard one the other day. I don't know if I shared this with you. It was, maybe about a week or so ago I heard it, about Bill Gates. Because Bill Gates is this multi-billionaire. This is what they're telling me. They're, you know, not knowing that, you know, I lived in Silicon Valley when Bill Gates wasn't Bill Gates and he became Bill Gates. And tell me, Bill Gates, you know, he's got the formula to... It's so funny. I'm really sorry. He's got the formula for the shot, for the antivirus. He's got the formula, and he's not releasing it. He's waiting for people to put money into it and for this pandemic to become an epidemic all over the world, and then he's going to relieve everybody because he's got the pharmaceutical company that's going to produce the antivirus, and they're going to pass this out. They're going to give people forced vaccinations, and if you don't get vaccinated, there's this whole scenario, 1984, Orwellian life and everything like that. And I'm just listening to them, you know. I mean, if Bill Gates wanted to take over this world, if he did, I mean, think about it. Microsoft, do you realize like about 80, 90% of the computers in the world run on Microsoft Windows? All they had to do was stick a virus in your desktop. He could do whatever he wanted, right? I mean, think about it. What are these people saying? But these are very prevalent. People are talking with this language. And it's breeding fear. It's breeding, when you see the fear in people's, in their hearts, in their minds, it's manifesting. That fear is manifesting in these kind of theories because they're trying to make sense out of something that is senseless. Just 4 months ago, you never thought that COVID would have brought you here. Just a week ago, you never thought that that killing would have brought our world to these demonstrations. When, and compounded on top of that, you've got people taking advantage of the situation, going in there looting and creating riots. And then now people are saying, well, the demonstrators are rioting. No, you know, there's two different things. And there's a lot of confusion out there. And now you're standing there and you're saying, okay, I'm a one individual. What can I do? Because I think anybody who has a good sense of who they are in this world is looking for purpose, right? And what could be a greater purpose than to work for peace, than to work for understanding? And we're seeing a world where there is no understanding. I mean, we've got government officials who are at odds with one another. Here in the United States, we've got a president who's inciting, who's speaking a language of hate, who is trying to get people motivated to go out there and, well, like I've said to you, to fight fire with fire. And you fight fire with, you should know it if you're a next stepper, you fight fire with a hose, with water. Of course, everybody knows that, right? Little kids know that. You got a fire there, you put water on it, it goes out. But what are we doing? We're fighting it with fire, right? More firepower. And it's interesting, the language that we speak, right? Bring out the weapons. We need armies, we need military, we need weapons to do what? To bring peace. It's not my language. This is what you're hearing. Go listen. Listen very carefully. They're called peacekeepers, and they keep the peace by being forceful. And I know you can make all kinds of arguments. Those of you who have listened know that, for instance, I have a formula, and there's a video out there. It's called Leveraging Love. It's based on Archimedes' principle. That give me a lever and a fulcrum long enough, a fulcrum and a lever long enough, I could move the world. Of course, it's a basic physics experiment. I mean, every high school, if not in high school, you've done it in junior high. If not in junior high, you've done it in elementary school. You've got a large weight. You've got racism. You've got hatred. It's a large, large, large issue. You need to change it. Give me a fulcrum. Give me a long enough stick, and I could move it. And you've done the experiment, right? You put a rock someplace, you can't pick it up, but you put a fulcrum next to it, a stick underneath it, and if it's long enough, you exert some force on it, and you move the rock. You get a long enough stick, and you move hatred. And we have to admit that it is such a big deal that you really, really need a long, 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 long stick. But it's doable, isn't it? It's doable. Now, I know we get ahead of it and we say, well, you know, you can't. What are we supposed to do right now? And you start understanding that, you know, military power, yeah, it brings about changes really quickly. And we're seeing it in the streets. There's looters out there. There's people rioting, and you bring in the military, and all of a sudden they start running. Well, that's what you want, right? You want them to run. But where are they going to run? They're going to run either someplace else to do it, or they're going to come back another day. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be in 20 years, but it may be in 30 years. It's going to come back again because the underlying issues have not been addressed. And so I'm in a dilemma, and I think a lot of people will share this with me. It's like, what do you do at this point? Do you engage in politics? Politics, it's fantastic. We were just discussing this the other day, a small little family meeting, like, okay, what do we do now? How do we bring about those changes that are so necessary? How do you bring about laws and rules and regulations? And how do you curtail police violence? How do you stop them? How do you stop empowering them? You've given them a weapon. You've given them a gun. And you've said, go out and enforce the laws. Keep the peace. And when they go out there and they shoot, they hurt, you've got new issues. This is a dilemma. And it's one that at my age and where I'm at, and because of my background, my activism in the past, I am struggling with. Because it's the basic question. Something's happening out there. What it is isn't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there. These are words from 1968. And here we are, 50 plus years later. Yeah, there's something happening there. There's a man with a gun over there. What it is isn't exactly clear. Well, what are we doing? What are we doing? And what can I do? As you get older, you realize that, hey, you know, life has its limits. Physically, are you able to do it? And what can you do? And what about that one individual solitary life? How can you effectuate the greatest change with that life? Big, big issue. Do you get involved in social activism? Do you go into changing laws? Do you get out there and you protest? I'm tell you really honestly, I think that these protests are very important because they're bringing attention to it. I have a feeling that if there wasn't a pandemic, if there wasn't the coronavirus out there, more people would be at work. And I'd really question whether we'd see these kind of numbers out on the streets. I think that the violence is a diversion from what's happening. It's like us when we demonstrate on April 24th, there's like 100,000, 160,000 a couple of years back demonstrating on the streets. And then these 10, 15 Turks come on the other side and they are what's called a counter-terrorist group. And they make some noise and, of course, they get all of the attention. And then we're standing there and saying, hey, listen to us. We've got a story over here. Well, you know what? I put my feet in the shoes of these demonstrators today, and I realize that if I sit around and just think about the riots and about the ugliness and miss the point of the demonstration, well, it's exactly the way I feel when sometimes we get slighted when we're demonstrating, and people always go to the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. The crying baby gets the bottle, right? You make more noise, they're going to feed you. They're going to take care of you. So it is a dilemma. And what do you do? And then me as a priest. What is my priesthood all about? Be honest with you, I can't get into it when they say, well, come and join this group and we're going to make a statement. You know, the clergy are going to make a statement. Clergy shouldn't be a separate group. Clergy are people. They have a calling. The clergy should be with the people, making a statement with the people. I understand that. Groups of clergy, because people are looking for leadership. But you're seeing what's happening. You're seeing leadership. That's the word. I mentioned a few minutes ago, we've got a president who is inciting people to violence and then gets up there in a very hypocritical manner and holds up a Bible at an ancient church, St. John's Church in Washington, D.C., after gassing people so that he can make his way and hold up a Bible. I mean, isn't this exactly everything Jesus taught not to do? Don't make a show of your religion. Don't make a show of your faith. Stop being hypocritical. You can't say one thing and do another thing. You can't call yourself a Christian and hate in your heart. And there's all kinds of things, dilemmas, moral dilemmas that are coming up. And they're crushing me right now because I'm a priest, one who has taken a calling. I'm seeing brother priests, brother clergy out there and sort of like making a mockery out of things, either getting involved in politics, quoting things that don't matter, or being quiet by saying, we're going to have a prayer vigil and we're going to light candles. Well, that's fine. You're lighting the candles. But meanwhile, the least of my brothers is being killed on the street. So what do we do? Think about it and we'll return after the song. Every week we take a little break, about halfway through the show, some time to mentally digest what's been said and think about it and to play some good tunes. Today, right now, I'm going to feature our dear friend Ara Dabanjian of Element Band. He put it together a really beautiful number called Moonless Nights. And I just heard it yesterday. I think it might have even came out yesterday. But you know what? The video is just, it's really nice. Especially if you remember a couple months ago, we shared with you another one of his creations where he plays all the instruments. He's such a talented individual. I won't say more. Listen. That's the important part about music, right? Listen. Moonless Nights by Ara Dabanjian. Thank you. Moonless Night, the name of that song, Ardabanjan. And it is very special when you see the video. And you need to see the video. So do check out the show notes today, and I'll put a link on there to the YouTube, as well as to Element Band and Ara. It's just when you see talent like this, I mean, the only thing you can do is encourage it. It is beautiful. All of his music, and it's always a pleasure to hear him. And when this one just came out, wow, I wanted to share it with all of you. I hope you enjoyed it. Called Moonless Nights, and the video is worth watching all the way to the end. That's all I will tell you, okay? And once you see it, you got to check out last time's video. What was it called? By the River? I think that was the name of it. Anyway, you'll be able to check out all of Ara's great work on the links that I provide you, okay? So where do we go from here? What is the answer to all of this? Can we ever go back? What is my role in all of this? These are the questions of, I believe, a lot of people. It is definitely for me. What do we do with our lives? Now that we're seeing this, I mean, there is no turning back. It is Pandora's box. It's been opened up. There is no turning back. This is the world that we have right now. And we know that racism is one of those things that you can only put a bandage on, right? You want to solve it, but you can't. 1992, we had riots here in Los Angeles when Rodney King was beaten. And the entire issue of race came up. And all of the media outlets made all kinds of documentaries. Race in America. All of the newspapers, all of the magazines. Well, now it's 30 years later. Newspapers and magazines do not have the influence that they had back then. TVs with their documentaries are now moved over, and they're on social media, small mini documentaries where you can see in a few moments along a big story. You know, it's just like revealed right there. And in fact, you can be the documentary maker today, right? Because you have access to all of the clips. And we're seeing that more and more. So we're seeing people are taking the clips and they're making their own documentaries. It's like an 8-minute or 10-minute little video, somebody told me, of the George Floyd killing. That it was like you see the entire 8 minutes that he was held under this man's knee. And when you go and you look it up, you find out that it's a 10-minute video that somebody has made into a mini documentary, you know, and highlighting it. And this is really the advantages of today's society. I mean, just the idea that I'm talking with you right now, right? We're going to be starting our 13th year of broadcasting. 12 years ago, we started The Next Step. It was unheard of. Unheard of 20 years ago, 30 years ago. That somebody could take a microphone and broadcast to the world. The only way you could do that in those days was, you'd have to go and beg for some producer. You'd have to have a lot of money. You'd have to go up to three main outlets, NBC, CBS, ABC, then Fox came along. You'd have these four networks. You'd have to go and you'd have to pitch your show to them and for you to get a voice. Now, you know, 12 years ago, we got a microphone, we got some software, found some web space, and we started broadcasting. Today, don't even need to do that. They'll give you the web space. They'll give you the equipment. You don't even need it. You can see what's going on right now. People got an iPhone. Oh, yeah, I'm a producer. People get a few little apps. And, oh, yeah. I'm editing. I'm editing film on my iPhone. And you may laugh about it. You may get a good chuckle out of it, you know. Yeah, everybody's doing it. But it's true. And the same is about religion. Yeah, this is what we have right now. I've got my phone. I've got an app on the phone. It tells me how to dial into God, whether it's through a prayer, a mantra, whatever I want to do. And it's basically relativism pushed to the extreme. Everybody and their buddy can be the guru of the day, right? And yeah, it's there. It's accessible. It's freedom. It's freedom. You could say what you want. You could believe what you want. You could put it out there to people. The more people that you get, and you know that there's a lot of people who will measure it by the number of hits that you get and how popular you are. You see the mega churches rising and they've got thousands of people, and you see your traditional churches dying with a few people, and it's just all bombarding you. And you realize, okay, I've got this number of years in my life. What can I do? What am I going to do with this life that God has given me when we're seeing the world fall apart? I want to do something more. Do I change the laws? Do I get involved in politics and turn into one of those politicians? And we see that these politicians are not... I think that there's a lot of good politicians who start off with good intention, but what happens? They have to play the game, just like any other business, any other tradition. So what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And that's what I want to share with you. I struggled with this, and I came to a point where I realized that I probably have only one option. Because of the calling into the priesthood, it requires me to address at the spiritual level. And the minute that I understood that, I realized therein is the answer, because there is no other answer. I want you to think about what's going on in this country, in this world right now. We have the case of a man who, if he was not black, probably would not have been treated like that. He probably would not be dead at this moment. He is dead because his skin color is different. And there is this injustice. I want you to think about what happened over the last few days, about the riots that took place. It was very interesting to me that on last Friday, right after we did the next step, the following day, was it the Friday or Saturday, they launched SpaceX. Now, this is the Elon Musk rocket that went up into orbit in the International Space Station. And I had a chance to watch it on, it was Saturday. We watched the liftoff, and the demonstrations had just started the day before, and we're watching this and we're talking about inequality, injustice, and then the riots break out. So we've watched this space shuttle take off, and the riots break out that night. Sunday morning, I'm supposed to be at St. James. The proximity of St. James to my house means that I have to go through the riot areas. And on top of it, I should say that this is all my old turf. I went to school a couple summers. I went to Fairfax High School, and that was right. I mean, we were Saturday night watching on TV where the looting was taking place, where the vandalism was taking place, where the burning was going on, was right at Fairfax High. So, you know, I had to go through this area, and it's emotional, and you're going up. And as I'm getting ready for the service, I'm watching the SpaceX capsule is docking with the International Space Station. And the commentator says it's 200 plus miles above the surface of the Earth. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, can you imagine? We have the technology, we have the means, we have the know-how, we have the knowledge to be able to hurl two people out into space and have them meet up with others in a mission of peace, of goodness, at a place 200 plus miles above the surface of the Earth. And here we are. We can't even talk with one another. We can't even exist with one another on our own soil, on our own planet. Ironic. Puzzling. And it's in that spirit that I went and I served and I did the Divine Liturgy, of course, with masks. And this is what I'm telling you. Life, is it going to go back? I don't know. It's almost surrealistic what you have to go through these days. to deal with the COVID virus, to present the liturgy. Anyway, we did the liturgy and we streamed it. Thank God there was people following along. We said our prayers and then I'm out back into the world and you're seeing all these things unfold. One of our dear parishioners is watching TV that night and sees the family, a family-owned business, clothing store, sees the clothing store being looted. Can you imagine? You're watching television. You're seeing looters come into your store. And then the store is torched. A huge fire in Long Beach. And you know, all these things are going on now. So you've got like demonstrations. You've got riots that will take your attention away from what the good demonstration and protesters are doing. You've got a guy who's dead and that's finished, you know, because of what happened. And that really kind of triggered everything. It's served as the catalyst to get everything going. You're seeing death and destruction on all sides of you. You're seeing intolerance of people towards one another. And then on top of it, you've got leadership. You've got a president who's going in and saying, you're weak if you don't put these people down, talking a language of violence. You've seen a president who goes out there and holds up a Bible, the most sacred text to us, right? I can't speak for anybody else. To me, there's nothing more sacred than the Bible. We call it the breath of God. And then what happens? He takes advantage of the situation and holds it up. We don't even know why he's holding it up. All we do is we keep seeing these pictures. Then somebody points out, hey, the Bible's upside down. Well, yeah, if you're not reading it, doesn't really matter which way it is, right? It's true. Doesn't matter which way it is. If you're just using it as a prop, doesn't even have to be a Bible in there. If it's a prop, you can, you know, just have a label on it, the Bible. You don't know what's inside of it, right? You really don't. And this is the atmosphere that we're living in right now. And on top of everything else is you can't say anything about it. Because you do, everybody is so polarized. They are so polarized that you're sure to get into an argument. Just as I'm sure that right now as people heard this, they turned it off. Yeah, it happens. But as a priest, you need to be able to say that, okay, what am I going to do with my life? I've made this commitment. I've had this call that I have answered to the poor, to the lonely, to the diseased. And now I need to be able to step up to the plate. It's not enough to just hit that thumbs up on Facebook, you know? Like, good going. It's not enough to retweet a person's message. We need to be able to stand up and be counted and get your voice out. And I realize that there's only really one voice that we can talk about. It's the voice of God. And hang on, you know, because I think that, you know, there's a lot of good, well-intentioned people. And they'll get into politics. But you know what? Politics is for today. And we see over and over what's going on. We'll see that people come in with good intentions. But once you get into that political cycle, you have to think about re-elections. You have to campaign. You have to play favorites. And you have your favorites. And it's just a vicious cycle. We think that there's a lot of good people who go out there and do some meaningful work through agencies like, you know, whether it's the United Nations, the Peace Corps, whatever it may be, there's some good agencies that are out there doing some great work on an international level as well as in the local level. There are people who are doing humanitarian work, feeding the poor, feeding the hungry, helping out by clothing and sheltering the homeless. Very, very important, necessary work that has to be done. But there's something missing, and this is where the priesthood comes in. What's missing is the presence of God. And it's as simple as this. I don't want to make it more complicated, but it's as simple as this. When God's not in the equation, it's just doing things. We're just doing things, right? When God's in the equation, there's a purpose to it. you start understanding that, hey, it's not about, you know, the Jews against the Egyptians. And so God opened up the Red Sea. No, it's not about the Philistines. It's not about the Palestinians. It's not about the Armenians. It's not about the Italians, the Spaniards. It's not about Russians, Chinese. It's about people. Because the minute you put God in the equation, what happens? You realize that we're all his children. You realize that the only language you can speak is the language by which God speaks, a language of love, that everybody is his child, that there are no favoritisms. And this is the very basic lesson that Jesus Christ tried to teach us. And we fail at it miserably. We failed back then by putting him up on a cross, by asphyxiating him, and we fail today by not allowing him to have a breath. It's so important. You cannot understand how radically different Christianity is from all other religions, including Judaism, until you take the words of St. Paul. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither male nor female. There is neither slave nor free. For we are all one in Christ Jesus. What's that formula? Well, we're all one in this planet. We're all one people. We're all ourselves as human beings created in the image of God. If you have that, now, what do you think about abusing somebody else? You can't. You can't. See, this is what I'm saying. The fundamental issue is a spiritual issue. It's a spiritual issue of understanding that we are all one. Once you understand that, and this is where the teaching has to be, because once you start understanding that we are all one, then you could start peeling apart the layers of this. I don't like the layers of the onion, because in the middle of the onion, there's nothing. I'd rather think of an artichoke, of peeling away the layers of an artichoke and finding the delicious heart in the middle of it. And that's the same thing with life. It's got to have that spiritual element so that we understand that our only hope is when we understand that we are all children of God. We are all creations. And we are here. And, you know, this goes back to Einsteinian physics, which is, you know, I alluded earlier about Aristotle and his Planck and his ability to leverage the world and our ability to leverage with the use of love. But think about Einstein when he says God does not play dice with the universe. And yeah, he didn't believe in a God like that most people believe, that, you know, he's like sitting up in a cloud. He believed in a real God, that if there's a design and an order, it's so beautiful and everything, there has to be a God behind it. There is something. There, whether you want to call it energy, you want to call it a God, you want to call it Father, there is something behind it. And most people who examine and touch and deal with life will eventually get to that realization. And this time, where the world on the world stage is a man who gave up his life, was killed, not willingly gave it up. He gave it up against his will, but nevertheless did give it up. That life has triggered us to be thinking about the spiritual, about what's essential in our lives, and you finally realize that the only thing that is constant and can cure the disease in this world is a return back to God. Because therein you understand that we're all one. You understand that we are all created in the image of God. You understand that we are all his children. You realize that we are all brothers and sisters. If we come from the same father, same mother, it means that we are all brothers and sisters. And that's the key to our survival. And it goes beyond. The message that Jesus Christ gave is the message of forgiveness. Yes, we're going to mess up in this world. We are going to hurt one another But it also requires that we forgive one another. Not only once, not only twice, not only thrice, but 77 times. In other words, always, get over it. You're people. See, once God comes into the equation, you realize that, okay, you are not God. If there is a God, that means you are not God. And what happens? Ego has to go out the door. Ego flies away. When ego's not there, you can now start talking. Look at the problems. Look at everything you're seeing out there. It's all being driven by people whose egos are telling them that they are more important than somebody else. That their version is a better version than everybody else's. And Jesus was the great equalizer who said, forget about that stuff. You're all one. And the kingdom of heaven is accessible to everyone. There's not an elite group. There's not a chosen group. Everyone has access to the kingdom. Wow. I told you, it's remarkable. It's novel. And I realized that the more I tried to search for an answer to what do we do, how can we go back to there, the more I realized it's right in front of me. It's the calling that we've always had. It's the calling what Jesus Christ calls us to. It's the calling to be human by understanding that we are not God. Can I make it any more simpler than that? Acknowledging God means that you are human. And you have the frailties, you have the imperfections of life. You are forgiven, and you need to therefore forgive others. I'm always amazed at how we complicate things. Just as we were saying a few minutes ago about how we take that delight in torturing things. We torture our minds, we torture our brains, we torture our souls with things that really are not part of the Christian tradition. What Jesus Christ came and taught was very simple. It's that faith as a child, believing your Heavenly Father is in charge. And in so believing that you are His children. And if you believe that, guess what? You have no other option but to believe that we're all His children. Racism doesn't find a place in that kind of life, right? You can't have racism because we're all part of the same race. What? I'm against myself? No, you can't do that. And when you do find times where you slip up, you have a built-in referee. It's called forgiveness. And you forgive because you are forgiven. And so I cannot tire from this ministry. I cannot be tired of it. Yes, sometimes it seems like we're ineffective. When you see people out on the streets, you realize that you have to be out there and helping them, you have to be tending to them, but so much more important is that spiritual story that needs to be told, that we are not just physical beings. That we are here as children of God, and that our only salvation is by extending ourselves to one another, by reaching out to one another and holding one another, flying together, as the saying goes, we are all angels with one wings, and the only way we can fly is by reaching out to one another. I'm optimistic for this world, as bad as it seems these days, as horrible as it seems these days. Will it ever get back to the way it was? What will be the new normal? I don't know. I don't believe in predicting the future. I believe in making that future by moving forward, by doing the best that we can, by sharing the love that God has given us and making God real in our lives first and foremost, so that it becomes an inspiration to others to make God first and foremost in their lives. I have a few more things to say. I'll say it after Susie makes her sayings, her announcements. Be back in a couple moments, okay?
Hi, Susie here again. again reminding you that the next step is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We invite you to check out our extensive archive about applied spirituality and Christianity for just about every life situation. You'll find past podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and of course at the In His Shoes website. We're proud to have these podcasts available to our worldwide audience, with listeners added daily. To become a partner of this ministry, please consider donating by pressing on the donate button on our website. Your monetary contributions goes to maintain and further this dynamic mission, bringing the message of Armadoxy into the lives of a waiting world. Let us know if you'd like to sponsor a series of podcasts by dropping us a note at feedback@epostle.net. That's epostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World, .net. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you for your prayers and your support. You know, a couple days ago, somebody called and was just talking about all kinds of things about the presence of God in our lives, especially considering these riots recently, and talking about different things about how do we know this or that about ourselves. And I found myself, like, thinking about 101, you know, like entry level. And I thought to myself, you know, what a blessing the next step is, because we've got, like, now we're finishing our 12th year. We're going to have our 12th anniversary in a couple of weeks. And we start thinking about the volume of material that's out there. What needs to be done next is this needs to be put together and bound and put into sort of a manual of Armadoxy, exactly for people with questions. Because I, as this person was asking me, I thought, wow, you know, if she had just been part of this experience, you know, we talk about these things. And now, you know, it's evolved into all kinds of things where we have our outreach programs, we have the In His Shoes ministry, where we're out there and helping people, and into our Bible study programs, which, by the way, it's been going pretty nice on Monday evenings. If you're interested, drop me a line. I'll get you a Zoom password, okay? How's that? It doesn't get any better. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you for all of your support. I'm going to leave you with what Susie said. If you feel like being a part of this ministry, it's very easy to do. Just go on the website and press on the button. Yeah, we make it easy as well. Listen, I got some exciting news for you. Starting Monday, we're going to be having prayer nights every night, 7:30 Pacific time. Yeah, Pacific time. That's California time. Yeah, I know. California will take the entire Pacific time zone. Anyway, we're going to have prayer night, and it's at 7:30, and it'll be streamed on the Diocesan Facebook page. Now, I know people have said, I don't have Facebook. You don't need Facebook. You just need to have access to that page. And there's so many ways of doing it. But we're going to be doing a prayer every night of the week, with different focuses. For instance, the first night we're going to do for the unemployed. Considering what's going on in the world right now, all the unemployed people and all the hardships they're going through, think about it, prayers for them. Tuesday it's going to be for, I believe it's for the elderly. The elderly who definitely have given their lives for so many others. And now it's time for us to focus in and keep them a part of our prayer life as well. Wednesday evenings, it's going to be, actually, these are all coming from different places. The first one is coming from Santa Clarita, St. Sarki's Church. The second one is coming from the Ararat home. The third one, the Wednesday night, is coming from Cupertino, California. It's going to be dedicated to the professionals, healthcare professionals. Prayers for them. Yeah, very important. Thursday night, we have prayers for those mourning. You know, it's sad. We do prayers for the dead, and we sometimes forget about those who are mourning, who are hurting. Prayers for the mourning. That's going to come out of Glendale St. Peter Church. Friday night's prayers for healing coming out of Tahunga Church. Saturday night for the prisoners. for prisoners. We need to keep them in our focus and in our prayers. That's coming out of Sacramento, our church up there. And Sunday night for those who feel lonely, those who feel isolated. And that one I'm going to be doing. I'll be doing that out of Burbank. So 7 nights, 7 different prayers, and it'll be an ongoing program that I want to let you know and ask you for your prayers, your support, anytime. By the way, you don't need to be on at 7:30, because once it gets aired, it's then archived. So all you need to do is make your way over to the Diocesan webpage, and I'll probably be sharing on mine or on Epostle. We'll do it someplace. You cannot miss it. Let's say it that way. And if you do miss it, just drop me a line and I'll send you a link. We'll get you connected one way or another. I'm very excited about it. The Archbishop's very, very excited about it. And we're trying every way we can, and being helped by the conditions, not by the pandemic, but by the conditions of the pandemic, where we have the availability of streaming now, we're going to be able to stream these things. So it's not just small little areas, but it's a worldwide audience that can participate and be a part of these prayer services. So God bless you, and I hope you'll join us Monday evening, 7:30. With that, we'll wrap it up today, okay? We got the theme music playing, and I'll invite you to drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net. Love to hear from you, and whatever you want to say, send it to me, okay? Big shout out to my nephew, Nodag. Right as we are producing this show, I'm getting texts that he's the proud father of twin baby boys, and I'm a proud granduncle, great uncle, granduncle, whatever it is. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.